This is Michelle.
And this is Andrea.
And we're Black Girls Vibe. We decided to do a special podcast off our time cycle to give you all the lowdown on our experience at Super Bowl week last week in Atlanta.
Yeah, it was a great time. Week full of events culminated in a relatively uneventful game on Sunday, and football season as we know it is officially in the books.
It's in the books until August.
Yeah,
but we got plenty of other sports to keep us busy until then. So we did a number of things. We attended opening night, which is the media night where both teams make themselves available to the press. And as I recall, the Patriots the Rams did theirs first. So it was a format where all the key players came out and each one had a station, a booth where they were being interviewed by different individuals. And then kind of in the middle of it, all the team's players and coaches all came out from both teams onto the stage. And then after that, the Patriots had their media availability. I was pretty impressed with it, with the whole layout. What did you think, Andrea?
I enjoyed it, too. I mean, it was nice to kind of see State Farm Arena transformed into that type of environment. And, you know, I was there a little bit later in the evening and caught some of the Patriot players doing their media and press interviews. But it was nice how, you know, the layout and just kind of the interaction on the floor and everything. So it was different. I know that they've kind of reworked the kind of opening night and media day into what we have in this format now. So it was something different.
Yeah, indeed. And we'll post some pictures. I know we posted some pictures of us at opening night, but we'll post some pictures just so you can get a sense of how it was laid out and what the staging looked like and everything. It was pretty impressive. I had never been into that was my first time in the renovated, well, now it's State Farm Arena, formerly Phillips. And that was just impressive to be in that new structure. But then to see how they had completely, like, you wouldn't even know basketball games were played there.
Right. Yeah. So I think it was a job well done and great way, you know, at least for us, like you said, to kind of kick off the our Super Bowl week anyway, knowing that events clearly had started that weekend prior.
Right. And so then the day after, on Tuesday, we went to the NFL, the Super Bowl experience.
Right.
Andrew, you want to break down what that experience was like? No pun intended. I caught myself saying it. It was too late. I apologize.
Okay. Well, it was a snowpocalypse that didn't occur on that particular Tuesday. So we took advantage of it. And as we trekked our nice and made a long journey through the halls of World Congress Center, down to the levels that then entered into this. I tell you, I know it was on at least one concourse, or it was probably, or one building. It may have been in two, but there were maybe some 30, 40 different activities that you could, or stations that they had. So when you walk in, we were welcomed with different players that you could kind of pose with and just kind of stand in and pretend in their uniform and your favorite team with the 19 to represent the year. And then just kind of work your way around through the building. And goodness, I mean, it was everything from a 40-yard dash to kind of like passing games to just anything interactive that you could think of, a kids area with a Play 60. I mean, it was a lot to do, which was good. It was a kind of nice family-friendly event, definitely an experience. And I forgot to mention, as we kind of walked down, as we made our way through, they had the Hall of Fame area. So we have photos of some of the different Hall of Famers, like, you know, Joe Montana, his bust, Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, and just kind of the eras of all the different commissioners, NFL commissioners.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely, it was almost sensory overload for me because, as you mentioned, there were so many things to do and so many activities. And because you had like the injection, probably unexpected injection of all those kids into the mix because of the, what I'm going to call the aborted snow day. Yeah, it was a lot going on there. I think I was most touched. And most interested is probably the best way to put it. Most interested in the social justice exhibit sponsored by Rise.
Mm-hmm.
It was really fascinating to get like the history level. It's like an examination of race in American sports, you know, tracing from the late 1900s to the early 20th century, all the way to present day. And the ongoing issues around NFL protests and boycotts centering around Colin Kaepernick and the issues that he's brought to the forefront by virtue of taking a knee. I think I was most impacted by that exhibit. But yeah, I thought the experience was a good time. We should mention that for the opening night was $30 and the day we went to the experience, it was 20, but we went on a day where the price was 50% of what it was before and after. It was $40, in the days leading up to last week. And then $20 Monday through Wednesday and went back to 40, through the rest of the weekend. So we got in on a day where it was cheaper. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It was definitely something, regardless of, you know, you didn't have to have a team that was in the Foot Super Bowl or a team that even has a winning record. Like, there was something for every fan of every team.
Right.
Which I appreciated.
Yep.
So then we, trying to think of these days, they're starting to run together. On Thursday, we had the opportunity to attend the Fritz Pollard Alliance Foundation, which, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it is the organization essentially that helped Johnny Cochran and Cyrus Mary, both attorneys, were part of the effort to bring more Black and minority coaches into the league. And in an effort to avoid being sued, the NFL came up with the Rooney Rule. And the Fritz Pollard Alliance was largely responsible for the implementation of the Rooney Rule and has served as a resource to the NFL in identifying and providing prospects and candidates for not only coaching roles, but front office and executive roles, and not only for people of color, but for women as well. So we had the opportunity to go to their Johnny Cochran Salute to Excellence Awards last Thursday. And I thought it was pretty cool. That you just got to see like living legends all throughout the room. Yeah. What coaches did we have the occasion to see last at that, Andrea?
So Coach Tunt there, Marvin Lewis and Mike Smith.
Yeah, yeah. And both current Commissioner Goodell as well as immediate past Commissioner Tagliabue gave remarks, which was for me, it was unexpected and maybe the same for you, but it was just kind of interesting to see, you know, the senior officer of the league there representing and genuinely showing like interest and concern, and had a lot of complimentary things to say about Mr. John Wooten, who kind of became the focal point of our activities on Thursday and Friday. Mr. Wooten, for those of you who aren't familiar with him, played for the Cleveland Browns and blocked for Jim Brown. And if you all are familiar with that iconic picture of Muhammad Ali being flanked by a number of the prominent athletes of the day back in 68-69, Mr. Wooten is in that shot somewhere to the back and to the right if you're facing the picture. So he's a very well-renowned football player. Civil rights advocate, and very well respected football scout and is the outgoing president or chair of the Fritz Pollard Alliance. And so the occasion was also designed to honor him for all of his service, and to just hear the outpouring of love towards him was really remarkable. Don't you think so, Andrea?
Yeah, I think so. It was very, just with the different award recipients throughout the night, just everyone who came up and spoke and, you know, had some remarks just directed towards him, and just the impact and the influence that he's had for anywhere from a player to a coach and any type level executive, in whatever role they may have with their respective organization, just how, and then just the span, like you said, from his playing days to now, and how he's been able to truly impact and genuinely impact people who have been in the league and currently in the league in whatever capacity, and just how humble he's remained through all of that. It was just amazing to kind of witness firsthand.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So, yeah, I think that was, I mean, we did a lot of fun stuff and a lot of interesting stuff, but I think having the opportunity to be in the same room and space with Mr. Wooten was like probably my, like, as far as takeaways and what I'll value most about the things like that we did in that realm. Like, I think that that's it for me. Like just getting to have access to such a humble gentleman with who's so well respected throughout the NFL community.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond. Yeah. 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 You know, one thing we don't, you don't usually hear about if you, with regard to the Super Bowl, especially if you're not in the city where it's occurring, is some of the collateral impacts. And not that we came face to face with it in any other way, but other than media discussions, I was really struck by the focus on the emphasis on getting out the word about the sex trafficking issues that occur.
Mm-hmm.
Around major sporting events and the Super Bowl in particular. But you were telling me, Andrea, that Atlanta, outside of hosting the Super Bowl, Atlanta has a sex trafficking problem.
Right. And I can't recall right off if we're like the number one city, but we are, you know, close to the top, unfortunately, in sex trafficking. And so, yeah, just kind of being involved with some of the Super Bowl planning, at least from a transportation level ahead of time, and just listening to those conversations. And like you said, the emphasis that was being placed on sex trafficking during that 10-day period of Super Bowl events, it was, yeah, something like you said, it's not the glitz and glamour and all of the positive that comes along with it. There are these unfortunate things that also come along with having these types of events in the city.
Yep. Yep. And our listeners will be interested in hearing this, that Lindsay, whom we interviewed in the last podcast, actually took, did some photography for USA Today. They did a feature on a sexual assault survivor. This is a young lady who was lured to Houston and was forced to do sex work for 3 years before she escaped back to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And so she spent last week, her name is Sierra Thompson. She spent last week doing a lot of on the ground advocacy in Atlanta around these issues. So we're going to post that article on our Facebook fan page so that folks can learn more about that. But yeah, that's kind of the underbelly and dark side of the Super Bowl that you won't see discussed or, you know, a focus of any of the commercials during the actual game.
Right.
Also interesting as a related note like that strippers are recruited and brought in specially to entertain during Super Bowl week. And this article this expose that ran on one of the local TV stations' websites was talking about, like, even T.I., who apparently has a new strip club, he brought in like 100 of the country's best strippers just for the week. So you just don't think about those things when you think about the game, but
right,
it's a real problem that occurs, and, you know, we should probably try to highlight it more, you know, to trying to be responsible about these things and bringing attention to them. Not everything glitters with regard to the Super Bowl. Exactly. That was my takeaway.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's very true.
And you know, the issue that just seems to loom over the NFL generally these days is Colin Kaepernick and his supporters' boycott of the NFL as a result of him not having been hired for a team for his protest against racial inequality and police brutality. There was a mural, and a local Atlanta artist, and Andrea, you're going to have to chime in and tell me if I, when I get this wrong, because I know I will. There's local artist had commissioned to be, had been commissioned to do a mural on the side of a building of an image of Kaepernick. He did it. And then within a couple of days of the Super Bowl, the building gets destroyed or demolished. Is
right.
that accurate, so, Andrea?
Right. So the building that had the Kaepernick mural on it was, yeah, exactly. It was demolished a few days ahead of the Super Bowl. And from what I've read, granted, it hasn't been all articles. It's still not clear, or if it wasn't clear at the time, who was responsible for the demolition, but right.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely added fuel to the fire around the Kaepernick issue, but I saw an article, I guess I saw it today, but the artist actually did several other murals or other artists, I'd have to check. Either that same artist or several other artists did Kaepernick murals this weekend before the game to make up for that one having been demolished.
Right.
Like,
I think
throughout
there were
the city or something like that.
Right. So yeah, it was just kind of an effort to, I don't know if it's defiance or whatever the word is, but you're right. There were some other artists, local artists, who kind of came together and did the 7 or 8 additional Kaepernick murals, just kind of in response to that demolition of that one particular artist's work.
Well, Andrea, let me ask you this, and we're having this conversation in the context of Kaepernick, but you and I are both, it's safe to say you and I have both watched football most of our lives.
Right.
Was there ever a season where you watched less? And if so, when was that?
I mean, there probably hasn't been, it maybe just in some kind of down years, like if there was a team that at the time that I was supporting, if they weren't doing well, but not like an overall across the board, you know, like I'm just not watching, or if, you know, things get a little busy sometimes and so you can't make every game on Sunday. But for the most part, it's been pretty consistent for me to watch football, you know, especially in recent years, pretty regularly.
Right. Would you say you're sympathetic to Kaepernick's plight and what he's trying to bring attention to?
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, you and I have talked extensively about this and, you know, and touching on a few different points. But I mean, I do. So what were we, a couple of years now ago that he initially during what
preseason 16
game?
So August of 16 is when he first started. He started by sitting on the bench,
right? And then it went to the knee,
and then it went to the knee. Yes,
right. And so for me, it wasn't a conscious, he was, you know, verbally communicating, this is what I'm going to do. It was more of a, it just, the media took hold of it and just kind of ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the message of why he was kneeling, you know, I support, still do then and today. And those who joined him supported that. And those who did not, that's your decision. That is your choice. And so his original meaning of doing it, I do still fully support. I think some of that has gotten lost quite a bit. And just over time with, you know, again, media and others chiming in, and then him, of course, clearly no longer playing in the league. And so I think what was supposed to be a representation of social injustice and bringing attention to what's happening in the community has just you know, evolved into something I don't think he originally intended to be.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. This has just been spinning in my mind for really some time, but last week really put it into focus to me because you have the folks who are so clearly still in support of Kaepernick and didn't want to have anything to do with the Super Bowl or any of its related activities. And then I, you know, juxtaposed that with getting the opportunity to meet Mr. Wooten, and who speaks so glowingly, who speaks really with reverence when it comes to what football has meant for him. You know, that it allowed him to go to college, that it allowed him to provide for his family, that it allowed him basically, you know, also a platform.
Right.
Trying to kind of juxtapose and reconcile how, you know, this is a man who's devoted his life to football and has devoted it in the context to his work with the NFL. So trying to reconcile it to the extent that it can be, maybe it can't, like the perspective of a Mr. Wooten who takes the approach of let's try to work from the inside out and fix the things rather than throw the baby out with the bathwater, to those who have taken the position that they don't want anything to do with the NFL until Colin Kaepernick is black on a roster. I just don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. I have decided though that people have different definitions of what it means to stand with Cap.
Right.
And, you know, who am I to judge? Because I think there are people who continue to watch, who watch games, who would say they stand with Cap. Who am I to judge what they view, you know, how they view their alliance with him?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little uncomfortable by those who go as far as to say, like, to judge those who have continued to watch. I just don't think it's that black and white an issue. Like, they're a sellout, they're this, they're that. I just don't think it's quite that simple a label to put on somebody.
Right. And I agree with you, because I do believe that there is an opportunity to have the dialogue around it and to not have that judgment as to, oh, well, I'm not watching, you shouldn't either, but what is the reason why you're not watching, or you're not purchasing paraphernalia, or you're not attending the games? So what is that right. reason? And it's different for everybody, like you said, but I don't think that there is necessarily the space to have the judgment. It's good to have the dialogue around it.
Right. I mean, it absolutely is. Like, you know, I can think of without like singling out anybody, but like to offer as a way of example, like there's some I know some very folks who identify with Cap, stand with Cap, are very, if you want to call them black identified and identified with the struggle, but are Patriots fans.
Right.
And in these kind of culture wars that are going on, the Patriots are the team viewed as being most aligned with the current presidential administration.
Right.
And all the baggage that kind of can come with that. But they're no less attuned to what Cap is going through. I'm not willing, absent having a conversation with someone where I get a sense that, oh, well, they just don't believe in what Cap is doing. I'm just not willing to not extend some level of understanding or some opportunity for conversation around it. But I do know some folks who just are kind of lined in the sand. If you're not on this side of this issue, then, you know, you're a sellout, you don't stand with Cap. And I'm just not willing to label people just blanket like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, me either. And you know, like, again, we've had conversations about this, especially in the past week, and, you know, even conversations I had with other friends who were in town about the same issue. It was like, it's more of a sports, and specifically in football, it's a sense of camaraderie amongst friends. And so if you decide not to watch, then that's okay. And we'll reconvene whatever our circle is outside of football.
Yeah.
And we're fine after that. Like, it's okay to have that. It's not even a disagreement, but difference of opinion, and still maintain some type of relationship and around this. So, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could, as we have done in the past, we could go on talking about this forever. But, you know, I think it's worth, at least for our platform, opening this discussion up. I'd love to hear, and I'm sure Andrea feels the same, love to hear folks' thoughts about this particular issue. I mean, I know we have a lot of friends who are 100% boycotting the NFL in any way, and others who have continued to be engaged in some way and, you know, haven't modified their level of engagement at all. And we have some who have kind of taken more of a middle ground whereas I used to purchase season tickets or participate in a fantasy league, I'm not doing those things, but I still watch. Andrea and I want to thank you all for listening to this special episode of Black Girls Vibe. We really do want to encourage some conversation around some of the topics we broached, specifically around kind of the sex trafficking and the Super Bowl piece, as well as the Colin Kaepernick piece. We really want to know what you guys think. So I want to encourage you to check out our Facebook fan page. It's Black Girls Vibe Tribe. Just request to be added as a member, and we will be more than happy to do it. And as always, check out the podcast. It's available on Anchor, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Stitcher, a bunch of podcast platforms. So anywhere where you can find podcasts, you can find Black Girls Vibe, and we'll see you again soon.